think we're in trouble.
Tammy Henderson. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily the opinions of the hosts, Dark Plains Radio Network, its owners, or any affiliates.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Dark Plains Radio Show tonight, right here on the Dark Plains Radio Network. Boy, oh boy, I'll tell you what, it has been a heck of a day, and I'm glad it's winding down. And, you know, just one of those days, guys, where kids are starting to get out of school and you got to sign them up for this and sign them up for that. And Brian, you're there. And Tammy, you're there, right?
Hi. Hi, everybody. Exciting to be here.
Kids are getting out of school.
They are. They're already making plans for, I got a little guy that's getting ready to hit kindergarten next year. And so there's a ton of hoops to jump through because, you know, it's a new thing and he's got to learn how to act in school and stuff. And so it's quite an adventure for all of us.
I'll bet. But,
oh, man. Yeah. This week, though, since we had the last show, has just been flying. It seems like yesterday we were on the air. You know, it's just been one of those weeks, really.
It does.
My week has been very slow. It's like walking in molasses, but...
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Lucky you. Want to trade?
It's been painful. It's been a painful week.
It has been painful. How's it been painful
for you? I know
your
week has been painful, Brian.
Well, mine has been. Yeah, I got thrown off my four-wheeler the other day, and I think I cracked a rib. Ouch.
Nerves. So we're lucky to have you tonight, you know?
Yeah, well, at least I didn't puncture a lung, so that was good.
That's good. Always think of the positive.
He's playing injured tonight.
I am. So if I gasp for any air and anybody hears me laboring with my breathing, it could be because my rib is jabbing my
lung. I'll call 911 for you.
Well, I can always take you to a witch doctor or something. You know, we can always have the shaman from last week give you stop by and give you a visit.
You know what?
Oh, you might like that.
If there was a way that would work and it would make it quit hurting, believe me, I'd be all over it in a heartbeat.
So you don't think it works?
I'm skeptical, man. You know me. I'm skeptical of everything. If I have proof that something works, you know, to me, then hey, I'll believe it. But until I have that evidence and that proof, I don't believe it. That's me.
I know that Reiki works. Reiki works.
I know. It made my lawn look beautiful.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah, but hands-on healing does work, so you should give it a try, Brian.
Oh yeah. Go to Playboy Mansion, get some hands-on healing.
Oh yeah.
Not that kind.
Well, that'll make me quit hurting.
Not the sexual healing, as Marvin Gaye would sing it. No.
What's wrong with that, though?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Well, this is a family show anyway, so yeah, let's steer away from that anyway. It's just a thought. All healing's good. It doesn't matter to what extent, I guess. Brian, pop a couple Advil and have a beer. That'll make you feel better.
Now, this is more of a hydrocodone pain than it is an Advil pain. Yeah.
Yeah,
I had my knee ripped off in knee surgery, and I never took any pain pills. So I can deal with it. You can deal with it. It sounds like a Tylenol moment for you, Brian.
Wait a second. You had your knee ripped off. How do you walk?
It's been repaired. It's been repaired. Okay. Yeah. And it does great now, but it has been ripped off before. No lie.
What do you do? Pick it up off the ground and say, damn, knee got ripped off again.
My kneecap was on the upper part of my thigh at one point in my life. I fell on a wet floor, so it was not a fun experience.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Did you show your friends at least before you went to the doctor? Hey, look at me.
I hope you got pictures of that.
No, because I was working in a hospital at the time.
Well, at least you were close to medical
health. Yeah, that's right.
Pictures for the internet. Oh, and by the way, guys, no haunted headlines this week.
Really?
Chris, well, Chris Balzano is a proud papa. That's why.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard. You know what? We want to definitely give all the congrats to Chris from Dark Plains Radio. Hey, man, way to go.
Yeah. Way to go, man.
Yay.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome to another Bill. I mean, another baby. Beautiful baby.
Sleepless nights, diaper changes, spit up. Yeah. You gotta love it.
I mean, come on. Guys, would you really go back to diapers?
Nope.
Come on.
Not in a million years would I ever go back to
that. Well, nope. I have to admit that mine is still in training. We're having difficulty with him. He is, and I don't even want to share the experience because it would embarrass me.
No,
and him.
You know what? My boy is the same way. He is more defiant than anything else with it. And yeah. So, you know, he's still in pull-ups. When we go out to, like, restaurants and stuff, he's so defiant that we actually put him in a pull-up because to avoid those embarrassing situations.
Mine was playing on the computer today, and he goes, "Mom, poop." And I said, "Oh, you need to go to the bathroom and poop." He's like, "No, poop." I said, "Okay." So I walk over, I look, and I'm like, "What is that in the floor?"
Ah, don't you? Oh, man.
I'm like, "Where did that come from?"
That ain't a Snickers bar.
I was like, "Is that a dog poop or what?" I was like, "Where did that come from?"
A Caddyshack moment.
I scanned him. I checked him. I didn't see any. But evidently, he likes to stand and play on the computer. So evidently, it rolled out and landed in the air, and he told Mommy, "I pooped on the floor."
You know,
well, that's not my idea of potty training.
You know, anybody that has kids has gone through these moments. I don't care if you say your kids have been angels. You have gone through that exact moment to some degree or another.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm glad I'm past it. I'm glad I'm an old fart now. I don't have to worry about it.
For life.
You know what? Now the only thing I have to look forward to is
grandkids.
No, just grandkids. And then if I smell something obnoxious, I can just hand them back to Mom or Dad and say, "You got to get busy. Here you go."
The next diapers in my house will be my own. All right, that's how diehard I am on that. I'm done with kids. You know, grandkids, absolutely right, Brian. You have the right idea.
Yep.
You know, grandkids will be wonderful because you can spoil them rotten and send them home.
"Here you go, son. This thing stinks. You better take care of it. I don't want it around like that."
Absolutely. But, guys, we have an absolute blockbuster guest tonight. You know, the guy has been everywhere, including Ghost Hunters, and he is the founder of NEAR. Do you know what that is, Brian? You know what NEAR is, right?
New England Anomalous Research.
That's right, Keith Johnson. Let's welcome Keith to the show.
Oh, I thought you were asking what NEAR was. Welcome, Keith.
Hello, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Good,
we're
good.
Hanging
hey,
in there.
Hey, Keith, do you want to weigh in on the diaper saga?
Yeah, I heard that, and I'm very, sure very familiar that. With it. Been there, done that, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How many Rugrats do you have there?
I just got one.
Oh, me too. Just the one boy.
Yep.
And you know what? I learned after one. I'm done.
That'll happen.
You never know, Joel. One may sneak in.
Yeah. There ain't nothing sneaking in. Trust
me. Never can tell.
I've been telling Joel to go get that little in-the-office operation done, but he keeps shying away from it.
Well, let's talk about something way more pleasant. Let's talk about demons.
Oh, yeah.
That's a much lighter subject. I love it.
You know, a lot lighter subject.
Oh, yeah. Well, Keith, tell us what exactly is a demonologist?
Well, a demonologist, my personal definition, a demonologist is someone who studies demons, has a sufficient, I would say, amount of knowledge about demons, the demonic realm, and hopefully uses that knowledge, hopefully not for a negative purpose, but for an altruistic purpose, a very positive purpose to help others and assist in certain cases where there may be demonic spirits involved. So that's my basic definition of a demonologist.
So demonology also has an evil side then, if you will.
Oh, yes. Yeah, like anything that has potential power to it, you know, like Spider-Man there, you know, but with great power comes great responsibility. these are potentially very, very powerful forces, and if not handled correctly, they can cause a backlash and really, really do serious harm to other people and the person who's using, trying to harness that power, because you are dealing with definite intelligence here. You know, it's just not a random force. It is intelligent, and if you abuse it, it's going to come back at you.
Hmm. Wow. That does not sound cool whatsoever.
No.
Well, it's very, very potentially dangerous field.
I had no idea that there was really... you never hear about that end of demonology, if you will. The, like you said, the dark side of it. You know, that never quite... you know, makes the light, pardon the pun, you know, never quite
right.
Makes the light side of what everybody's talking to or about. You know, where does, just one more really quick question here. My question is, when did modern study of demons, modern demonology begin?
Well, it's been going on for a long, long time. But in modern times, I would say it's, it really has boomed in the 20th century, in the probably the early to mid-20th century. Like I said, it's been going on for many, many centuries before then. But the Vatican, of course, has many, many records which are kept top secret of many exorcisms, and, of course, a lot of them were done in the 20th century and, of course, the 21st century, too. So this stuff is obviously a reality, and it's obviously still going on. So, I mean, if you go back to ancient times, like the Magi, the three Magi here at Christmas time who visited the Christ child, they would actually be demonologists as well. They'd be they'd study the zodiac, they'd study demonology. So it's been around for many, many years. But of course it does have a very modern practice too. As I mentioned, the Vatican is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
Now come think of it, that movie Angels and Demons is coming out, so that's very prevalent too, yes.
That will be very interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing that movie.
Now, what, Keith, exactly do we have out there for hard evidence? Now, I know there's lots of stories. I know there's a lot of stuff, but do we have actual film of an exorcism where people's heads are spinning around and things they couldn't survive and things that are going on that absolutely could not happen otherwise? Is this stuff out there? And if so, where do I find it? Because I would love to see it.
Actually, there is some astonishing evidence out there, and there is some that has, of course, a lot of these ceremonies where a formal exorcism is performed, especially in Catholicism, that's kept very secret. It's very confidential, but there is footage out there. There is audio as well. For example, the case with Annalise Michel, who Emily Rose is based upon, where it's a horrific exorcism, and it's very, very startling, and it's to listen to it, it just takes you aback. And as far as video evidence, there are videos you can Google online. Some will be legit, some will not, of actual exorcisms. But for example, my friend Lorraine Warren shows footage of an actual exorcism that her and her late husband Ed were involved in, where a man's head starts, part of his forehead starts opening up, his eyes change dramatically. He starts drooling blood out of his mouth, and this is all very, very sudden. You just see his face change, and his whole personality is taken over, and that's a very striking, realistic portrayal of an actual exorcism.
Well, how easy is it for someone to get attacked or become demonic? I mean, how easy is it? It just seems like...
Right, it seems easy. Actually, well, the comforting thought is that it's relatively rare. For a full-blown actual demonic possession, it's very, very rare. What is much more common is oppression, when somebody's being oppressed. Now, if unchecked, and if somebody's very sensitive, if it goes on a while, the oppression stage can lead to possession. But it is very, very difficult for a demonic spirit to actually take over somebody, because they have to be open enough, they have to be at a point where their psyche is broken down to the point where they no longer resist. So And that's why, I'll tell you this, it makes it a lot easier for the demonic if somebody invites them in. Because then they don't have to go through the channel, so to speak, of, they don't have to go through the strategy of systematically breaking a person's psyche down.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody invites them in, that makes it a lot easier.
Well, what's the move? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, well, how do people do that? How are people inviting these demons into their lives and being afflicted by them?
Well, by using such devices as a Ouija board or automatic writing or doing certain incantations, certain spells, working with demons, and that gives them an invitation where possession may not happen spontaneously, but you're giving that spirit an in, so it has permission, so to speak, to infiltrate somebody's life. So once it's in there, it's going to, then the oppression strategy is going to start. It's going to work more and more and more at this individual, and somebody may wind up with an attachment because of that. Now, not everybody who has a spirit attachment, it's not always the result of them inviting it in, but, I mean, there is always the possibility of that happening, too.
So, do you believe that ghosts can mimic a demon?
I think it's more the other way around. I believe that demons mimic ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, demons mimic ghosts, and they also can mimic the souls of departed loved ones, because they do have advanced knowledge, they have the wisdom of the ages, so often they will masquerade, their masters are masquerading as the deceased, and especially as departed loved ones. So that does happen quite frequently.
Hmm. Well, you know, let's just say one morning I wake up, and I say to myself, you know what, I know this is going to sound funny, I want to become a demonologist. Where does somebody begin in that kind of training?
Well, one thing you need is patience, and you need faith. I would say you need faith and you need patience. Where does somebody begin? They begin the search, I would say the same way as I did, by simply gathering all as much information as you possibly can. Now, that knowledge and information is a lot more attainable today than it was when I first started out, because when I first started out, there was no internet, of course. The internet... When you think about it, the internet hasn't been really available to the public all that long, you know, especially when you get, let's say over 30, there was a time when nobody had the internet, and you had to rely on library books and word of mouth. So I started through reading, of course, the Holy Bible, Holy Scriptures, talking with people who are experienced. So if somebody wanted to study demonology, get really into demonology, I would suggest that they read all they can about it, study all they can, and very importantly, contact people who have many years of experience. And that is the best way, I think, networking with people and learning from people who have been through it. And if you get the experiences of people who have been through it, then usually you will have that. You'll either back out of it, or if you're really drawn to this field, then you will have the patience and the faith to pursue it. And I would say find somebody who's willing to mentor you in this.
Almost become an apprentice, if you will.
Well, yes, exactly. Becoming sort of like an apprentice, although, of course, you can't always work with that person because a lot of times the person is out of state. They don't live in your immediate area, but you can keep in contact with somebody who has experience in demonology and, yes, kind of be mentored by that person. And you get to the point where you yourself can go out and start dealing with these situations. Although I wouldn't recommend just anybody just going out and getting involved in these situations because, like I said, they are very, very potentially dangerous, can cause a lot of harm, backlash.
Now, you mentioned the internet. Mm-hmm. How does somebody going to look for resources on the internet, how do they tell the difference between bogus material and good material?
That's not always easy. That's not always easy. So what you want to do is look for people who have been involved for many, many years and have been on, a lot of cases involving the demonic, and check out their background, their credentials. You know, do a search. You know, somebody may say they've been involved for many years, and in reality they may not. So check their history. Like somebody, of course, you know, like my friend and colleague John Zappas. He and I started around the same time, which is know, like 37 years ago. So, you know, you can easily look up our backgrounds. It's the information's out there, and check us out and through books and the internet and Basic Life Story. So if you have, you can find that background, that information, then that's a good chance that the person is legit. And compare it with other literature. Always compare, like he's getting a second opinion, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So that's the best way I would say to do a search if somebody's legitimate or not.
Well, Kyle from the chat room has a great question. He is wondering what you feel about demons that are created through basically stress and other hard feelings.
Mm-hmm. Demons created through stress?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, well, we all have our certain stress levels, and we can become our own worst enemy, obviously, through stress. And, I mean, these are very, very hectic times, and you can very easily feel oppressed. Now, whether it's an actual demon, that would have to be teased apart, whether it's yourself putting on the stress, whether it's a human agent, or whether it's an outside agent like a demonic force. I believe there are demons that, when you are stressed out, there are certain demons that will try to take advantage of that and try to, okay, I have an in here, so this person's stressed. If, say, that person has been studying the occult or involved in the occult, then the demonic may try to get an in, try to gain permission, again, with the law of attraction, the law of invitation. Now, there's such a thing as called a tupla, or one word for it, where you create, you kind of, it's a theory where this entity is created and kind of takes on a personality of its own. There are demons that will attack a person who's under stress or emotional anxiety, mm-hmm. and you can figuratively create your own demons that way. So then that's more of a psychological state, I would say.
Hmm.
So there's a difference then. There's the figurative demon and there's the actual physical demon.
Right, exactly.
Okay, two totally different things then. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm just trying to make sure I got it right in my mind.
Right.
What? You have a right mind. What are you talking about?
I do. I have a right side. My left side doesn't work, but my right side still does.
I got to do this because I heard this tape. What you talking about, Willis? Tell us, have you ever had the pleasure, or actually mispleasure, I guess, of actually sitting in on an exorcism?
Yes, I have. And that is something that, talk about draining, that's one of the most draining, exhausting, sometimes horrific situations you can be involved in. And in a situation like that, you have to approach it with faith and just essentially put yourself on hold. And, yes, I have been involved in exorcisms. I have been present for exorcisms. And even if you're just an observer, it can be an extremely, extremely draining, exhausting situation, and really not a pleasant one to be in at all. Mm-hmm. Very, very displeasant.
A little bit of an addendum question to that question is, how many people does it legitimately take to perform an exorcism?
I would say it would take, well, at least two. There should be at least, the very bare minimum, there should be two. I would say several. Several would be required to successfully perform an exorcism. But, of course, the Catholic Church, their protocol is that there has to be at least two. There has to be a priest performing the exorcism. There also has to be an assistant priest to take over in case that priest becomes exhausted or incapacitated for whatever reason. And there really should be at least several people, even just to restrain the person if in case anything happens. Medical personnel, if possible. Now, this is the ideal, of course. Medical personnel, people trained in restraint, where they would not injure themselves or the person who is under possession. I would say at least several people who are trained and prepped beforehand.
Can you talk to us about the process that you would go through then? If you, let's say you got a call from somebody and they said, oh, my son is possessed, can you help me? What would be your process at that point, Keith?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would talk to that person and thoroughly interview that person. Usually when somebody contacts you, either by phone or email, they do give you a lot of information. And I find out as much as possible and speak with them and then try to get help. I'd ask, of course, a series of questions like, have you received medical help? Are you currently under any kind of psychotherapy? Which is very, very important to find out. And, of course, it really helps if the individual has been psychologically evaluated, especially if it's a young child, like you mentioned. And then I would go through the process. It can be a lengthy process of contacting the proper clergy, coming out and evaluating the case. And a lot of people who contact, they want a quick fix. They, of course, you know, they're going through this. They want an end to it. And they would like us to just come right in and evaluate the case, perform an exorcism, and everything's okay. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. It's usually a very, very lengthy process where you try to get medical personnel, you try to get evaluations, then you get the proper spiritual counseling, and it is quite a process before the actual exorcism is arranged for, and that's if it's warranted. Then you have to get the team, organize the investigation team, as well as the deliverance team, those who are going to perform the exorcism. You have, and of course, with a lot of churches, you have to get permission from superiors. And so that's basically the process. But the positive thing is, once you seek help, there is a continual process. It's just one step after another after another. So something is being done to help that person in need. So, but it is a lengthy process.
Well, kind of as an addendum, I'm sorry, Joel.
Just a little bit
of an addendum. Can you tell us about what goes on in an exorcism?
Essentially, of course, there's many different religions and denominations that will perform exorcisms. Essentially, what happens is a team is gathered, and it can be similar to the birthing process, because you're casting something out of a person. You're praying over that individual. If it is a legitimate case of demonic possession, more often than not, the demonic entity, the possessing entity, will do anything to keep from getting expelled. Even if it realizes it's inevitable, it will do anything to fight to prolong the process, usually. So you have, say, a team, a deliverance team, an exorcism team. You have the lead clergy person or exorcist, whoever it is, and everybody is assisting him or her. And it's very, very lengthy. It can go on for days, sometimes weeks, but sometimes a matter of hours. And sometimes it's only a matter of hours. Sometimes it's a lot quicker. But you basically have the exorcist and at least a room full, several assistants.
Yes.
And they are doing prayers. Eventually they're addressing the demonic entity itself. Of course, that's very dangerous. You have to be careful with that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're basically expelling it. Now, the exorcist will read certain prayers and say it's a Christian exorcism from Psalms. They'll read some of the Psalms. They'll invoke the name of Jesus Christ, and they'll cast that out, if it's Christian exorcism, in the name of Jesus Christ. The entity will fight, and sometimes you don't know what's going to happen. It will do avoidance tactics, delay tactics, but you mm-hmm. keep at it. You keep at it until that possessing entity finally agrees to leave. Usually it pronounces its name, gives you its name, and then it leaves, and you ask for a sign of departure. Then hopefully the exorcism is a success. And always recommend follow-up counseling, because that person has really gone through a traumatic experience, although they themselves might not remember it, because when you're under possession, usually the memories are very, very cloudy. They're very vague. So, and, you know, of course, they will experience lost time as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
So recommend follow-up therapy. And if it's Christian exorcism, obviously Christian therapy, counseling as well. But that's basically the process of it. It's expelling the demonic entity through prayers and addressing the demonic entity itself. and it can be quite a struggle and quite a fight.
Huh. Has any of the afflicted ever lost their life due to an exorcism? I know I've heard of a couple cases, but just straight up because it was so stressful that they just their body gave out.
Yes, there are examples of that, and there are documented examples of that. It's rare. It's rare that that will happen, but usually, of course, the cause will not be listed as diet or possession. It's usually from stress or malnourishment, such as the case, the Emily Rose case, mm-hmm. with Annalise Michelle. She died of malnutrition, so usually it will be either malnutrition or stress-related. Very, very rare that somebody will actually die as a result of possession or during an exorcism. Yes, it has happened, and there's, of course, many documented cases that are not available to the public, but it's rare, but it does happen.
I saw that movie with the Emily Rose case, and it was very fascinating because they tried to say it was medical reasons that she was having the symptoms of being possessed and that the mm-hmm. exorcism was unnecessary. What are your feelings about that, on that case?
In that case, it did seem that the exorcism was necessary, but it was such a horrific ordeal that this young woman and her family went through. It really, it should have been monitored even more than it was. I know there was a deliverance team, there was an exorcism team, and there was medical personnel as well, but really everything should have been done to keep her alive, keep her nourished, which, you know, it's almost impossible to do in a case like that because it was so lengthy and it was so torturous, and so she was like very, very physically abusive. There's some indication that she may have had mental illness, some form of mental illness as well. So the fact mm-hmm. that it was so hidden at the time, was so clandestine, really didn't allow it, I think perhaps, the proper medical treatment that it should have, because it was so hidden. But then again, that's the way these things happen. That's the way they work. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember as a child, I was helping someone clean an old home, abandoned home. It was some job I had. And well, I was a teenager, and I found a Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what it was. I'd never heard of one. So I found it, and I took it with me, and I started using it very briefly.
Right.
And after reading the instructions, and it started out kind of giving me information and telling me how much my cousin's baby would weigh and da-da-da. And then eventually it started saying Satan is God and things like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, because it mm-hmm. worked for me by myself, and my siblings and my mom would use it and they couldn't get it to work. But I was like, I promise you guys, I am not moving it. It's moving it by itself. And it scared me so bad. After I said Satan is God, I was like, okay, this thing's going in the trash can.
Right.
Well, very scary.
That's kind of typical in some ways when the Ouija board actually works and you do get spirit contact and it turns out to be demonic. We'll start very helpful, like a guardian spirit. It's a protective spirit. It's giving you information, and a lot of times that information will prove to be true, will prove to be correct. But then once it starts to get a hold, then it starts mm-hmm. to reveal and brag, reveal its
yep.
true nature. And then it will start doing the blasphemies, the cuss
yep.
words, and the, insulting God and praising
yep.
Satan and what have you. So that's not uncommon the way that works, the way you just
Yeah, that's
described.
How it started, exactly. Yeah, I've had hands-on experience with that, and that was enough for me, and I was like, I never want to touch that again.
Well,
right.
Are you aware of anyone, Keith, that can use the Ouija board as a legitimate tool and be safe?
Well, some people say they can. Some people, like, for example, psychic James von Prague says he's used it with no repercussions at all. Some people use it all the time. I've personally never known somebody who uses it safely all the time without repercussions. And I think that if somebody is using it safely, usually that's a deception. That's based on my experience and my personal faith and belief. But very rarely somebody will seem to have no problems, and they'll use it for quite a while. Now, most of the time, I think probably over 90% of the time, the reason the Ouija board's working is just its subconscious impulses. You're moving it yourself. You may not realize it, but it's just, you know, you're formulating the answers in your own mind and what you want the answers to be, and your subconscious mind is using the planchette as an indicator. But it only takes that one time where it is a legitimate spirit communication and it turns out to be demonic. And then it can really sometimes, usually once you stop using it, nothing further will happen. But we have known many cases where there is a backlash as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead, Joe.
I was just going to joke because say it's kind of like a demonic lottery. You never know what's going to hit.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to ask, how do you tell the difference between, because, I mean, I've been using a Ouija board for years and years and years and years, never had a problem, never had any repercussions, never had any issues. I've gotten information from them, and Joel can verify this, that there's no way, any way that I would ever know that information that's been given. Joel's been there. And, you know, if you get some, you know, curse words and you get some slanderous words toward God or whatever the case might be, can't a ghost do that too?
Well, a ghost would be less likely to do that. When you get that actually speaking against God, that's usually an indication that it is something. I mean, if it's legit spirit activity too, that's usually an indication that it is something unholy. It is something more than just a ghost. It is demonic. Mm-hmm. Really, a ghost would normally not do that. That's for, you know, we wouldn't really find a ghost doing that.
I found many, many, many ghosts did do that.
Do you? Have you?
Oh, I absolutely have. I found tons and tons and tons of cases of them doing things like that. Obnoxious, you know, things like that. They're tricksters. The thing is that, you know, the spirit that becomes a ghost is basically our inner spirit. And you know what? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can play jokes, and I have a feeling when I hit the afterlife and become a ghost myself that I'll be one to play tricks too. Just have some fun.
Well, we have a caller, by the way, Keith. Mm-hmm. Caller, you're on live with Keith Johnson.
Hey, this is Kyle Bruzenek. How's it going, Keith?
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. I had a couple questions for you.
Sure.
I was wondering if, like, the stuff that they do in the movie Constantine and all that, you know, where, like, they trap the demons in the mirrors and stuff like that, if there's any validity to that, and then the other things that, the other types of theories or techniques they have to get rid of them, if there's any truth into it, or...
Well, of course, a lot of that's Hollywood and sensationalism. There are ways, in certain instances, where demons can be trapped, where they can be contained. But again, that's very, very dangerous and really heavy into demonology.
Can you trap them to do your bidding?
Yes. Yes.
Really? Well, I was just joking.
Oh my gosh.
That is possible. Sometimes they can be trapped and do your bidding. However, that is extremely dangerous because obviously they don't like obeying people, and they'll come out, and if you just make one mistake, one thing wrong, there'll be a backlash. And I suppose the greatest example of that is King Solomon himself, when he actually had demonic entities, seemingly through God's permission, he had demonic entities assisting him. And, of course, he was given a sacred ring that afforded him protection as well. But if you make one mistake, these demonic entities will turn on you because they hate doing people's bidding, even if it's going along with the satanic kingdom. They hate doing humans' biddings, and they will turn. It is possible in certain ways to contain them, but it's just a matter of time, I think, before there's the backlash and the retribution. There are, of course, ways of getting rid of them. It's like the second question. There are ways of expelling them, but if you have invited them in the first place, then it becomes almost like a legal issue. It's a spiritual legal issue where you tell them to leave, and they say, well, I'm not going to leave because I have the right to be here. It's almost like a legal contract. They have mm-hmm. the right, and they are not going to leave unless that contract is removed, you see? So then it becomes a matter of repentance. You have to renounce having called them in the first place, and, of course, you should have intervention from somebody else. It should be a whole team working, the deliverance team, in expelling these demons. Not that the contracts can't be broken, but you usually do need assistance, quite a bit of assistance and help, because they will try to keep coming back, and so it really has to be, that contract has to be broken, you know, mm-hmm. a spiritual legal issue.
You need a big group of lawyers, pretty much.
Right, exactly.
Well, thank you, Kyle, for calling in, man. Great question.
Thanks,
and
thank
I'll see you in a couple weekends, actually. Yeah, weekend after next.
Sounds good.
All right, man. Take care.
All right. Great.
Bye-bye. Well, kids, you know what?
Yes.
It's time to go to commercial.
Okay. Commercial.
Commercial. Yay, commercial. Yay. Yeah, we're going to go do our first commercial, and we got a pretty cool song. It's kind of goes with the whole demon in hell kind of theme that's going on.
Yeah.
It's called If We Descended, and it's by Hybris. I think people are going to like it. Plus, we got a really cool spoof commercial.
This sounds like a disease, dude.
Hybris?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it does.
Go get some penicillin and get rid of your Hybris. Yeah.
Get it back in, Hybris.
All right. Well, more with Keith Johnson right after this.
This is Kashana Evans from Epic Movie and Zoolander. You are listening to Dark Plains Radio. Brian, Tammy, and Joel.
Want to meet some of the best in paranormal? Then you'll want to attend the Great Lakes Paranormal Conference. It's coming, and you'll not want to miss it. The Great Lakes Paranormal Conference, July the 24th, 25th, and 26th, on Minnesota's historic Iron Range. You will get to meet and investigate with some of the top paranormal investigators in the field today. The original legend tripper, Chad Lewis. From hit movies, Children of the Grave, Keith Age. And from the hit show, Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International, Brian Harnois. Just to name a few. And you will investigate one of the most active places in the world and the birthplace of the modern NHL. The old recreation building in Hockeytown, USA. Eveleth, Minnesota, home of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. Plus speaker events at the historic Coates Plaza in Virginia, Minnesota. And meet the official voice of the convention. From Spooks R Us, Scotty and Wayne. Don't miss the Great Lakes Paranormal Conference. That's July 24th, 25th, and 26th. But remember, tickets are limited. So go to darkplainsradio.com to order your tickets today. That's darkplainsradio.com to get your tickets today. We'll see you there at the Great Lakes Paranormal Conference.
Have you been wondering what to get that special person in your life? Visit Mountain View Candleworks, your one-stop shop for candles, fountains, incense, specialty foods, and much, much more. Just visit www.mountainviewcandleworks.com. We make your candles with mountain care.
No straps. Hello, Reagan. I'm a friend of your mother's. I'd like to help you. You might loosen the straps.
I'm afraid you might hurt yourself, Reagan.
I'm not Reagan.
I see. Well, then let's introduce ourselves. I'm Damien Karras.
And I'm the devil. Now kindly undo these straps.
If you're the devil, why not make the straps disappear?
That's much too vulgar a display of power, Karras.
Where's Reagan?
In here with us.
Show me Reagan and I'll loosen one of the straps.
Can you help an old altar boy, Father?
Your mother's in here with us, Karras. Would you like to leave a message? I see that she gets it.
If that's true, then you must know my mother's maiden name. What is it? What is it?
Does your group have an investigator that smells bad, looks dirty, and generally gives your group a bad image? Well, worry no more. Because Dark Plains Radio presents the Scuzzy Investigator Grooming Kit. Now you can force this moron to clean him or herself up once and for all. This kit includes shackles and handcuffs for the unruly Scuzzy Investigator, hair scissors and a comb, and a shaving razor for those unsightly beards, which also works very well for non-European women. This kit also includes a wash rag and, of course, something they may never have heard of before, soap. This kit will allow you to finally clean up this Scuzzy Investigator and bring him or her into the realm of humanity for a change and bring the level of respect up for your group finally. Now you no longer have to pay to have homes that you have investigated fumigated after you're done investigating. If you act now, Dark Plains Radio will generously include its patented de-lousing kit at no extra charge. So hurry over to the Dark Plains store and order a kit for each Scuzzy Investigator on your team. You'll be glad you did.
You're listening to the Dark Plains Radio Network on darkplainsradio.com, providing you with a fun, new, exciting talk radio experience, bringing you the very best in talk radio. You'll hear news, sports, politics, the greatest programming, and the paranormal, or anything of interest from around the world. Dark Plains Radio doesn't just stop at that. We provide our listeners with the complete internet experience. Dark Plains Radio is now mobile. You can hear all of our great shows on Nokia Internet Radio and Moodio. Check them out. We're on your cell phone. You'll be glad you did. Listen to Dark Plains Radio Network on darkplainsradio.com and take us with you on Nokia Internet Radio or Moodio. Don't forget and keep listening to your favorite programming as Dark Plains Radio continues to grow.
And we are visiting with Mr. Keith Johnson, demonologist extraordinaire. Can you use extraordinaire after demonologist, guys?
I suppose.
I guess.
Does it work?
Depends, I guess, on the guy that you're talking to.
Yeah, maybe if he had a top hat and tails, maybe.
Yeah,
when
you know, and the little dance, the little cane.
It sounds like he'd be wearing a Liberace coat or something.
And all his years' experience.
There you go. Perfectly.
He's extraordinaire.
Well, you know, now I wanted to start this segment off with a question. Now, I know we were talking before the break about Ouija boards. Now, that basically is just a tool for spirit communication, okay? And if demons are able to infiltrate your defenses, I guess, so to speak, through a Ouija board, then could they not also do the same thing through EVP work?
That's a good point. It's a good point. EVP work has its dangers, too. The difference is, though, that with doing an EVP, you're doing it recording something onto a device, or a spirit is impressing its voice onto a device. With something like a Ouija board or automatic writing, you're actually opening up your psyche to this entity and asking it to manipulate your motor control. In other words, you're almost inviting a form of possession. You're asking it to move your hands to either write something out or move the planchette. And so when you're doing a communication device like a Ouija board, that is much more dangerous, because you're actually inviting the spirit to take over you to a certain extent, and you become much more personally involved. Whereas an EVP, that's more objective. You know, that's using a machine to have a spirit communication come through and impress itself on that machine.
You have that buffer.
It does have dangers, of course, like that, but not as dangerous.
Well, you know, there's a lot of investigators listening, and before we get too deep into this, if you're an investigator listening, please feel free to call the line, which is 218-305-4676. It's 218-305-4676. And can you explain, Keith, a little bit of the dangers of EVP? There might be a lot of things that people are not aware of.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you're collecting a spirit voice. Now, it's just a recording. It's the spirit impressing its voice or its substance onto either digital or analog, and we usually use analog, so it's impressing itself onto a magnetic tape. But some people are very, very sensitive, very, very sensitive to spirit voices, because they can be very upsetting, just the fact that they are spirit voices. And also, people can become very, in some ways, reliant on this, and because while you have this instant result of a spirit impressing its voice onto a tape, but that doesn't mean that everything that spirit says is legitimate, 100% legitimate. It could be a lying spirit, it could be manipulating, so... you know, just one thing for scientific purposes and religious purposes, but I wouldn't take everything or really much of anything that a spirit says to heart. Now, there was an example where we obtained an EVP that said the name, we were in a home in New York, Brooklyn, New York, and it said the name Beatrice. Now, we didn't have any clue who Beatrice was. We asked the family, who's Beatrice? We have a voice that says Beatrice. They had no clue. So one of the women involved asked her mother almost passed out. I said, my God, how do you know about Beatrice? Beatrice had been, in a past generation, somebody had a mistress who became inconveniently pregnant. Her name was Beatrice, and she was wound up missing, a missing person. She was never found. She was last seen in that house. So that did have some historic significance, but we researched that, and that was only in retrospect. It does not mean that anything a spirit says is necessarily truth. It may be posing as a human spirit when in reality it may not be. Another danger is if it's a demonic voice, some people are very sensitive, and if they are that sensitive, sometimes there could be an attachment where a spirit knows its voice is on there, knows that somebody is sensitive, and will attack, or will at least become involved with that person, attach itself to that person. That's rare, but it could happen. So we're always very careful with our EVPs as well. And when Sandra and I play them during classes, we always say a prayer for anybody who's listening in the class as well, that they will be protected and that nothing unholy will be allowed to attach itself to anybody.
Your mother so sucks in hell.
Yeah. I think we need an exorcism in the chat room, maybe.
There we go, exorcism.
Oh, they're gone.
Okay, now, folks, if you're going to come in our chat room, be nice, be kind, and be polite to everybody else around you. Yes. Otherwise, you're going to end up like that guy, and you'll get banned.
Bye-bye.
yeah. Well, to each his own, I guess, huh?
That's right. That's right. And then you get to look like a turd to everybody else.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I was just thinking that, but I was like, I so cannot say that.
Yes. You get the turd right brown icon now. And a big band right next to you. Yeah, it's cool.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Band. Nice to meet you.
Well, you know, absolutely, Keith. There are more dangers, I think. I actually had an attachment on myself not too long ago.
Oh, really?
Spirit. Yeah, and it, you know, all this time it's never happened to me. And mm-hmm. I was very nonchalant because, you know, I've been involved in the paranormal for a very long time, and I've never had anything like this happen to me. And it was a simple act of putting a camera, a motion-activated camera, in an area where I shouldn't have. And mm-hmm. it made them really, really upset, or made him, and he decided he was going to follow me around for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in fact, Brian and I, we had to take matters in our own hands, didn't we, Brian?
Yeah, I had to come over there and get rid of his lame butt.
What was so wrong with being followed around? Was it like tripping you up or throwing things on you?
No, he was a nasty one. He wasn't like Casper the Friendly Ghost that wanted to hang out and have beer with me. No, this guy was a mean one in life, and he was just as nasty in death.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. What you are in life,
that's
man,
scary.
Passes over.
Absolutely.
Passes over, so your ghost isn't friendly either.
Well, how can one, Keith, getting back to demons just for a second here, how can one, is there any kind of protocol for telling the signs for, you know, like if I have a loved one that seems to be inflicted, what should I be looking for?
Be looking for signs that of precognition, for one thing, that they seem to have knowledge that they would not normally have, such as, of course, speaking a language that they've never known or studied, but also that they have advanced knowledge of the immediate future. So-and-so is going to do this. This person is going to get into this accident. Things like that. Also extraneous things where you can, that's one way to tease it apart from mental illness, whereas things are maybe happening around that person. For example, when my brother and I years ago were involved in this exorcism of a 14-year-old boy, furniture would start moving around him. The atmosphere would change noticeably in the room. You feel that really drained sensation. It's very, very staticky, and it's very, very sudden. Rumbling sounds, knockings on the walls, things like that. And especially like anti-religious activity. Not just the person becomes anti-religious, but you see things happening around, like religious icons being thrown or turned upside down, things like that. So look for extraneous activity and precognition, things like that, and abilities, knowledge that they would not normally have.
Hmm.
That would be all psychics then.
Well, you know, that's a great point. We touched on psychics being even more sensitive to demons.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain a little bit about how that would work?
Well, a person who's psychic, who's sensitive, they're going, and I think we all are to a certain more or less degree, but a person who is just naturally psychic, they're very vulnerable. They're open to things, and something that's so intensely negative, like a demonic entity, they walk in there, that they're just going to be overwhelmed. And I've seen this happen. I've seen it happen time and time again. Sometimes when the person doesn't even know they're that sensitive, but they go in and suddenly they're blasted with this, they're overwhelmed. Plus, if a demonic entity can sense that somebody is psychic, that's going to be revealing it, so that person might be singled out and attacked psychically and even physically as well. So that's why if somebody is very sensitive, they should really, really be grounded before going into a situation like this. And then again, it helps to be mentored by somebody who's been through the same thing and has grounded him or herself and can help that person out, because it can be very catastrophic when you're first starting out.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that is...
We've seen that happen before, you know.
Well, I've got one for you, and I know we talked about this a long time ago, Keith, and we have a lot of new listeners, and I want to present this to you. What would you think if you walked into a case where there was a little boy about 4 years old who was making nooses for his G.I. Joes and telling them to die.
Right.
That kind of
stuff. Yeah, really great.
And, yeah, I do that well. I can't wait to be a ghost and I can do it for other people. But anyway.
That was my brother, actually.
And, you know, he was speaking in foreign languages that he didn't know, that none of the family knew. This kind of stuff was happening. The woman in the house was getting bruises and bites and all kinds of stuff on her and all this kind of stuff. Would that be something that people would look at as being demon-related?
Yes, yes, it could be. And I would get that child into therapy. Now, of course, children are very sensitive. They're naturally very sensitive, too. So there's a chance that child could grow out of this more and more as they get older. Say if they get around the age of 12 years old, that might start really tapering off. But a very young child can be very sensitive. Very rare that a child that young it would happen to, but it does happen. I would get that child into therapy and religious counseling as well, hopefully without traumatizing and reinforcing it too, which could be very difficult. So a child like that would need legitimate therapy. But those are signs like that would be something very much to at least pay attention to and keep an eye on, because they could be legitimate signs of spirit activity.
And it turned out it was a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more than a ghost. Yeah, it was a ghost.
Children are very, very sensitive, and they're open up to all sorts of spirits when they're that young.
Yeah, and I was able to get rid of the ghost, and it's been about 4 years now, and the child is fine, the mother is fine. She's not getting slapped and beaten and bitten anymore, which is pretty cool. I mean, candles that were not lit that were just suddenly melting. The whole atmosphere in the place was wild. When I first walked in it was like a very hot cave, I guess, is about the only way I can describe it. Living in Minnesota, it was pretty cool. This was in early part of November, and it was probably about 40, 45-ish outside. And she had the heat turned completely off. She had the fans blowing into with the doors and windows open, you know, and she had the fans set up in the doors and windows to suck the air from outside in. And it was still 80 some odd degrees. And the registers in her place were ice cold. And it was just hot. And once I got rid of the ghost, you could feel it drop in the first few minutes, it dropped 10 degrees. It was just wild. You know, and one of the things, you know, I mean, I've talked to people about that, and people thought, you know, that would be demonic, but that's just another case of a ghost is able to do those similar type things. And that's kind of where I come from when I ask the questions, you know, how do you really tell? How do you know the difference? How do you know that it is actually a demonic entity when you actually have ghosts that can do those things also?
That was relatively easy to get rid of, wasn't it?
It wasn't relatively easy on my part. It was kind of a tough fight that night, but I got rid of it.
Yeah. Hi, this is Valley.
Hi, we have a caller, Keith. Caller, can you turn down your background noise just a tinge if you could?
I got it up. I'm sorry.
That's all right. We could hear it in the background.
You're
on live with Keith Johnson.
Yeah. Hey, Keith, how are you doing, buddy?
You remember
today? You and Sandra, both of you guys, sat with us, Peggy Mouse's sister and I, at the conference in Kentucky.
Yeah. Okay.
You remember us?
Yes, I do. I do very well.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I was there when you won that skull.
right. Yes, I remember. You were sitting with us. Yep, and I won the skull. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad because I had been wanting. I have emailed you and. I didn't know if you got it or not, but I didn't know, but at that time, I wished I had known. I had an attachment, and I was notified later that next day about the attachment, and I kind of knew where I got it from, but it kind of scared me because when I found out about it, I went to the bathroom and tried to take pictures, and when I did that, that's when the attachment made itself noticeable, because the water faucet came on by itself, and I was in there alone in the hotel bathroom. So since then, crap's been going on left and right. And sometimes it's great, and it doesn't bother me, and then sometimes it'll do something really bad. And I had a friend of mine over. He's more on the UFO type deal, but he's pretty big time, and he came in and with me, and we did a little investigating in my garage, because usually I smoke, but I even quit smoking. like 18 meters and some EVP work, and he talked to it because the people at the conference, they told me that the attachment was, one person told me it was a ex-husband from a previous life, mm-hmm. and the other one just told me it was a bad attachment. And of course, Bishop Long, he went to the room with me and tried to get rid of it, but it didn't work.
Uh-huh.
He was a real nice guy, though.
Yeah, he was a very nice guy, yeah.
But anyhow, make a long story short, we found out that the attachment is negative. And like I said, sometimes, but it's, I don't think it's demonic. But see, I had this blog going, and people, you know, sometimes they scare the shit out of you. Pardon my French, but, you know, they scare you. Because then it starts making you think, oh, God, you know, you got some kind of devil with you and stuff, and it starts freaking the crap out of you. And, you know, I've been ghost hunting for a while, you know, and I did all the proper things to do. I did all the channels and all the sage. And, but, you know, they're going to get you, they're going to get you.
Did you have a question for Keith?
Yeah, what should I do?
Well, I would get, I would stay in touch with Bishop Long and with myself, and just, you know, keep a daily journal of things that are going on, and stay as positive as possible. Daily prayer will help, and anything that's positive, and that will help ward it off. But of course, stay in touch with people, and I would have yourself prayed for. It's, you know, special deliverance prayer, and with a team doing this, a deliverance team. Since it is an attachment, and of course, you know, the house blessing will always help, because that's...
Is it normal for it not to do anything, and then all of a sudden it does something? Is that a normal thing?
If you do what?
Is it normal for an attachment to not be noticed and not reconcile? You know, in other words, sometimes I won't even think it's here, and then all of a sudden, bam, it'll do something. Is that normal?
Yes, that's quite common. That's quite common. Yep, where all of a sudden they'll kind of spring into action. They'll lay low for a while, and then when you least expect it, spring to action.
See,
so
that's what
I would have. I would have prayer done over you. Yes.
Well, thank you very much for calling in.
Thanks
for
so much, Joe.
Nice talking to you, Allie.
Okay, thank you, Keith. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Great to have callers calling in. Wonderful.
I love it.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah. Absolutely, positively, man. And if anybody else wants to call in, it's 218-305-4676. Once again, that's 218-305-4676.
Well, you didn't use the DJ voice.
I thought it. I thought it sounded good.
You want me to do the DJ voice?
That's right.
Call-in number is 218-354-676. That's right. It's 218-354-676.
That's more the used car salesman voice.
I try to get the auctioneer used car salesman to kind of mesh it together, you know, but that's just me. I'm just joking.
Hey, Joel, I'm looking for a Cadillac. Can you hook me up?
Yeah, well, you know, because I'm just about ready to jump into a really serious subject.
Okay, jump.
I see a lot of demonologists out there, Keith. Is there a lot of folks just doing this that really have no business even doing it at all?
Yes, that is true. That is true, because a lot of people just, they go on the internet, and it's coming, becoming more and more a problem, because, and it's very prevalent, that these people, sometimes they're like 19-year-old kids, and they suddenly decide they're demonologists, and, you know, they get in over their head, and they don't know what's going on. Instead of doing the proper training, you know, obviously some people shouldn't be into it at all, but they're doing it for kicks, they're doing it for thrills, some of them because it's a power trip, and you see that more and more, where they're really not prepared for such dealing with these negative forces, and it's very dangerous for the people you're working with, too, I mean, because somebody like that could go in and maybe even have some success in the beginning, but then you get some real powerful demonic entity where it's going to attack that person, and you're trying to help somebody, and you yourself wind up, you know, being taken over or getting seriously injured. So that can be very, very dangerous and misleading for a lot of people, too. Yeah, that is becoming more and more prevalent, unfortunately, because the subject is so popular.
Yeah, it's the paranormal has just exploded beyond belief in the last, 5 to 8 years.
In general, every aspect of the field has.
Yeah,
with these little kids that think they know everything and know nothing, and claim to be the best in the world. Yay!
Well,
right, exactly.
Well, there again, I want to bring up a subject, means that we have three old dogs, if you will, that have been kicking around for a long time. I saw a group claiming to be verified and certified the best in the world. And the first question that pops in my head is, who the heck is verifying these people?
Themselves, Joel.
You know?
Usually it's themselves.
That just doesn't carry any weight with me. Yes, it doesn't matter that you're verifying yourself. I'll get on the soapbox really quick. But I'll tell you what, just because daddy can hire a publicist, because you know who I'm talking about, you are not the best in the world. All right? Now I'm getting off my soapbox.
I did try to get them on our show, by the way, and no response, just to let you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And these people, you know, when I talked about them to them, kind of to them in a roundabout way, they stood firm saying that they are the greatest, and the leader of their group has, maybe 3 to 5 months of real-world experience.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Stack that up against our 30 years, Joel.
Yeah.
They got us beat hands down, baby.
that kind of segues me into your group, NEAR. Not that it's that kind of group, but you have a lot of experience and a lot of experienced people on your group. Now, could you kind of explain to the people who are listening what it really takes to become a paranormal investigator? Because I hate the word ghost hunter. It just reminds me of a guy out with a shotgun looking
for
gold.
Right, exactly.
or
with a net, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hello, catch me one.
That's right. We're a ghost hunting tonight. We got some Schlitz and a shotgun.
Schlitz and a shotgun. I like that.
Absolutely. But, Keith, could you tell the people a little bit what it takes to become a true paranormal investigator?
It takes a great deal of research and networking with other people of experience. And it really takes many years of that, and the legit. Now, the people that are going to stay on, usually they are very legit, because somebody's not legit usually loses interest and burns out when they see all that's involved. You see it on TV, and of course, it has to be very glamorous and exciting on TV. You know, even like a legitimate investigation, they're going to show the highlights of that investigation. They're not going to show if they show the hours of reviewing footage, it's going to be in time lapse. So people do not really realize how tedious and lengthy and emotionally exhausting, physically exhausting it could be. So just years of experience and honesty, just, you know, of course you make many mistakes along the way. I've made a ton of mistakes myself, and but you learn from your mistakes, and as you go along, you just stay with it. You stay with it faithfully, and acquire as much legitimate knowledge as possible, work with others. So that's, I think, basically what it takes.
Do you find that people don't experiment anymore? I mean, I remember when I first started out spending hours and rolls of film, you know, squirting stuff into the air and shaking out dust mops and everything under the sun, going out in the rain and shooting pictures and doing all this kind of stuff to try to mess with my pictures as much as possible so that I could have some real world comparison when I got some anomalies when I was on an investigation. Do you find that doesn't happen very much anymore?
Well, a lot of times people are going out and they want the instant result, and you take a digital camera, you point it towards the sunset, you get a bunch of orbs, and a lot of people will put that up online as legit spirit activity. And I like it when groups, a lot of websites do this, they show like false positives. They show this is dust orbs, this is the lens reflection, and then they show legit to compare. So I like when people do that. A lot of people don't bother experimenting. They'll just put it up as legit. Oh, look, I got something. And immediately put it up. This is legit, you know, without... But it's wonderful if somebody does that and invites critique, invites criticism, too. Like, what do you think this is?
Do you find that's more of a ghost hunter that'll take that approach rather than a true blue investigator?
Right. You know, somebody that's in it for the thrill, and I went out hunting tonight, and this is what I got.
Yeah, it just makes me cringe when I hear that.
I know,
hunting.
Me too.
Right.
Well, you're out hunting, ghost hunting, more chance than not, you won't find anything. So, They put it up on the web. Look, we had a successful night. Look at this. Look what we got. You know, but because that's not really legit at all.
We got an orb in the field on a digital camera. We're the best in the world. Yay!
Yeah, that's right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I love it.
Great.
Yep. But there are groups that, that do put up the false positives as positives, so you got to be very wary when you see that.
Well, Keith, I was kind of curious about maybe one of the toughest cases you've been on or one of the most interesting cases, in your opinion, because I know you have lots of years of experience. So.
Right. One of the most interesting was the first major case we went on that turned out to be a full-blown demonic case, and it was really, you know, our first major case. And my brother Carl and I were still teenagers at the time. That was extremely interesting. It was unnerving, but it was very interesting. It was also very, you know, in some ways very frustrating, because that's another thing that's really not portrayed in the media so much, the frustration, the tediousness of it. We were in the process of helping this family, and another group found out about it. Now, this, of course, goes back to the early 70s, too. But another group found out about it, and they came to the house and attempted to, you know, discredit us to the family, and because it was a real interesting demonic case, and they wanted to take it over. So, you know, that you get all that, it makes trouble. There's always been that going on in the realm of paranormal investigation, but it was wearing on the family. The family was being, in fact, the wife of the family was very, very close to being taken over herself. She was being broken down, so her psyche. So she was getting close to possession herself. So, you know, we were doing all we can, and then you don't need other people coming in and interfering like that. And another case was a possession that was very, very, very difficult, very trying, because, you know, there was conflict of interest there. There was a, the person who was, it was a female who was performing the exorcism, and I was assisting. My brother and I were assisting. She was very sensitive and psychic herself, so she wound up being possessed while we were doing the exorcism.
Oh,
so
wow.
You're trying to help the possessed individual, then you got the person performing the exorcism taken over. So I need to kind of put things to a quick standstill.
It's a lot like the movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Like the movie out there.
Right.
Well, I have a really tough question for you.
Yes.
Do you indeed own a Learjet?
Oh, the Learjet, yes, the story of the Learjet. Well, I've said it time and time again. No, there is no Learjet. Yeah, that's a little running joke we had, and it kind of got out to other websites and stuff like that, because we're joking about the Learjet, because a lot of people just assume, you know, and anybody, I'm sure you've gone through this as well, that a lot of people, they ask for help, and they're desperate for help. They assume they can just gas up your jet or, you know, your cruiser and just go out there at a moment's notice, in time-lapse photography too, in video. So so I started talking about the Learjet, and I think some people actually started taking it seriously. Oh, they have their own jet. They can zoom right out here. You know, so,
cool.
So,
I thought maybe you got a government bailout and ran out to buy a jet.
Yeah, that,
isn't there
that
some
would
other
be nice,
corporation
you know?
That? Anyway.
Yep, we've already had one offer for somebody to be the pilot of the Learjet.
Oh, my gosh.
They don't have their pilot's license, but they'll learn very quickly.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, you guys can be guinea pigs.
Yes.
You know.
I'm qualified. Right. I've flown a jet in a video game before.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's like watching Ghost Hunters and saying, I'm ready to investigate. Let me go ghost hunting. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you know, I'd settle for the Near SUV, but we don't have that. How about the Near BMW? That'd be great.
I'd settle for the Dark Plains moped.
I know, I'm getting tired of the Dark Plains wagon that we have to take turns pulling each other in. It's getting old.
Yes, it's a radio flyer, though. So.
Yeah,
it is a radio.
Old.
Oh,
you know,
good pun.
Are getting old.
Yeah.
Those mules in that wagon, they're getting old.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we got to step up and get ourselves maybe a Near moped one of these days.
Right.
Not Near moped, but a Dark
Plains moped.
That would
right
be
now,
really
the,
cute.
Yeah, the Near mobile is a Hyundai Accent, a 2000 Hyundai Accent. That's the Near mobile right now. So.
There you go.
Well, you know, I guess the question I have for you is really, Brian and I kind of had this question anyway that we ever talked about. How do you weed out, how does somebody become an investigator for NEAR, and how do you weed out the people that can't cut the mustard?
The wackaloons.
Well, that
Without giving away too many secrets about your how you do it, but just...
Right.
You know.
For example, we just inducted a new member, went on his first investigation last night, his first official investigation with us last night, and somebody's been working, our show, Ghost Darn Near, you know, a paranormal TV talk show, Ghost Darn Near, he's been helping out with that, very, very loyal, for almost a year, for several months, almost a year, he's been helping out with that. He's very, very knowledgeable about equipment, so, you know, he has something to bring to the table, so to speak, very knowledgeable and very psychologically stable. And we got to know him, got to be very good friends with him. And, because, you know, in these organizations, it used to be years ago, usually you just meet somebody, a week later they remember because they have an interest. But mm-hmm. Now we have a lengthy screening process where you get to know somebody really well and they're very psychologically stable, and then you start taking them out in cases. So they become members in training. And usually, of course, you don't take them out in the real hot and heavy demonic cases right away, but you feed them in. And usually after a while, you'll just get to know somebody and they'll be very loyal. And after a while, if you see somebody like kind of breaking down after a while, you know, just like I'm not into this. I didn't know it'd be that many hours of reviewing footage. I thought something was going to happen right away. You know, then you can kind of weed that out pretty quickly.
Oh yeah.
But if we find somebody who's very, very, very sincere, interested, willing to learn, willing to work with us, and we're willing to learn from them as well, then usually they do work out.
I know in our experience for Brian and I, we have basically it's the evidence review. If anything will chase them away, it'll mm-hmm. it'll be the boring work, mm-hmm. and that has not proved us wrong yet.
Right, that's a good point. Very good point.
I need a clarification though.
Huh.
Now, when you first talked about your new member, did you say inducted or abducted?
Oh, inducted.
Okay. Just checking. I didn't know. Maybe you had a different recruiting method than we did.
Well, we saw him in a 7-Eleven, and he was alone.
He was alone. We threw him in the back of the white van with no plates. Yeah.
And a
new
mobile.
And no windows. It's the new mobile.
And we had to blindfold him to take him to the near cave.
Yeah, they gave him all the hazing and everything like that. You know, so.
I don't want to be a member anymore. Well, Keith, Brian, does anyone else have any questions? I feel like I'm talking a lot tonight. So, hey, guys, pitch
you're
in.
You're so talkative.
I'm kind of curious.
Well, I want to know, Keith, how did you come up with the name the New England Anomalies Research, or NEAR? Are you from England?
No.
I know that sounds for...
Right. No, in the New England area.
Okay.
Right. So we're in the New England area. Right. There have been times when we've gone all over the country, but especially, you know, our home base is in New England, and as my wife Sandra says, we're in Ghost Hunter Central, which is Warwick, Rhode Island. That's where we're based. So, which of course, Rhode Island is part of New England, the original state. So, and so many, many groups here, and so much happening all the time, so much activity. And in fact, we're less than 10 minutes away from the TAPS office. So that's why Sandra refers to this as Ghost Hunter Central. But we're based in New England, and that's why the name, you know, my brother was instrumental in coming up with the name as well, New England Anomalies Research. And it just seemed to fit. It just mm-hmm. seemed to fit because we do basically cover mainly the New England area.
Okay. I was just curious. I just thought maybe you were investigating castles in New England or Scotland or something. And
oh, well, we wish.
Cool. Get on that near jet and fly
over.
Near jet. Revved up, yes.
Well,
yeah.
How do you feel about ghost hunting schools? I hate that word, ghost hunting, but that's what everyone uses, but ghost hunting schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can be legit. You know, it's... I wouldn't say it's an exact science, though, an exact school. So, being very, very wary if somebody, you know, like a website charges you like hundreds of dollars and you get a certificate. Now you're a certified ghost hunter. You're certified. You're legit.
Well, one that you have to print off yourself and expend your own ink to do it, too, yeah.
Right.
Well, in a Word document.
The fact of the matter is, Joel, you know, like with our group, I mean, somebody can come and say, you know, I'm a certified ghost hunter from such and such here, and you know what? If they don't do it our way, they aren't part of the team, period. I don't care if they're certified. I don't care if they've been on TV for 20 years. I don't care, whatever. They do it our way or it's the highway, period. So really, the certificate really is not even worth wiping your butt with. It's not worth anything. So don't go out and spend hundreds of dollars on getting one because it is worthless. Sorry, I'll put my soapbox away now.
Well, you know, I think that I think for getting started, I think that like Keith had said, they could be useful tools. They're taken for what they are, and especially if it's one that's just basically very cheap, very inexpensive, and gives you great reading content, but doesn't. And tries to push you in the direction of finding a group to do real-world hands-on investigating.
If you can learn that way, it can be helpful, you know. But they still have to conform to the group they're joining because we all do things differently and have different thoughts and beliefs.
I know what you're saying, Brian, but at the same time, I don't want them to conform too much because experimentation is what's keeping this field moving forward.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, experimentation's great. Sorry, Tammy.
Joel, what started the whole ghost movement anyway, ghost hunting movement? I mean, I guess I'm just curious.
Well, that's a great question for our guest. What started the whole ghost hunting, I'll use in quotations, movement, Keith?
It's always been fascinating. It's a very, very interesting field, obviously, and dealing with the supernatural and preternatural. Of course, with The Exorcist, that was a big interest, of course, when that came out. But recently, with the so much more on TV, reality shows, you see this all the time, it's becoming more and more publicized, and I think so many people are fascinated and interested at it. It's really boomed. I mean, it is the in thing. And, I mean, compared to when I first started, it's gone leaps and bounds as far as the interest goes. There was an interest in it, a great interest, when I was much younger, but nothing compared to the avenues that are available today. And kind of like if you said you were into spirits, you know, investigating spirits, you know, what does that mean? Ghost hunting. You know, they look at you sideways and everything. But, you know, we tried to present ourselves as legitimate years ago, and there was a lot of criticism back then because the general public really was not ready to accept it. I think the general public is much more ready to accept it now, and it's like you said, there's a boom, so there's a great, great interest that's really escalated, especially in the past 5 to 7 years. It's incredible the way it's boomed.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of booming, we're going to have to boom into our next commercial break here, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we won't be able to fit it in. Because we just keep yammering on and on, which is great because it's a cool subject and it's easy to talk about and it's easy to lose track of time. So I'm going to go ahead and slip in our next commercial and more with Keith Johnson, if I can talk. Keith Johnson, demonologist extraordinaire, when we return.
Now live, we're on the air on Dark Plains Radio, darkplainsradio.com.
Do you think you might have a ghost in your home or business? Do you live in Minnesota or the surrounding area? Then you'll want to call the Northern Minnesota Paranormal Investigators, the number one paranormal investigative team in the state. Check us out at www.hauntingresearch.com and get the help you need today.
Sure, when it comes to sex, you're responsible, but now they're marketing big-size condoms, and frankly, you'd need a belt and suspenders to keep one on. Well, don't be embarrassed. Hot Dog House now offers regular-size condoms with big-size package names.
Bob, you dropped something from your wallet.
Oh, my God, it's
here.
My...
Here. Oh, the Hindenburg.
Only kind I use.
Order your regular-sized condoms from Hot Dog House with names that give you confidence. The Jolly Mean Giant, Cruise Missile, Pike's Peak, Superdome. Only you'll know the real story for a while.
So, why is there a munchkin riding in the Hindenburg?
Talk to you. clean the kitchen sink.
Honey, all I did was...
Use New Blue Ajax cleanser. Get you out of a kitchen bath.
Look, pot marks take the time. Even steel wool can't do the job. But watch Ajax with blue chlorine. Just a soft sponge and pot marks gone fast.
Honey, all I did was...
Get out of the kitchen fast. Get Ajax, now in plastic, too.
The sorrows of death comes to me. And the pains of hell got hold upon me. I found... Then called I upon the name of the Lord, and... Soul from death.
God, please, Lord, help me to release this demon.
Thank you, Lord, the most merciful, almighty.
Hold on.
Tacos enchiladas. Thank you, Lord.
You're listening to the Dark Plains Radio Network on darkplainsradio.com, providing you with a fun, new, exciting talk radio experience. Bringing you the very best in talk radio. You'll hear news, sports, politics, the greatest programming in the paranormal, or anything of interest from around the world. Dark Plains Radio doesn't just stop at that. We provide our listeners with a complete internet experience. Dark Plains Radio is now mobile. You can hear all of our great shows on Nokia Internet Radio and Moodio. Check them out. We're on your cell phone. You'll be glad you did. Listen to Dark Plains Radio Network on darkplainsradio.com and take us with you on Nokia Internet Radio or Moodio. Don't forget and keep listening to your favorite programming as Dark Plains Radio continues to grow.
Welcome back to everyone's favorite radio show, Dark Plains Radio Show, with your host, Brian Leffler, Joel Sturgis, and me, Tammy. And we're speaking with Keith Johnson on demonology.
We are.
Hello there.
Wow, she sound like a pro and a half, man.
I gotta
raise my bar.
Do you even own a bar, Joel?
No. I've drank it a few.
I sold my bar. I sold it to the pawn shop about 6 months ago. I have no bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should go get it out of Hawk and raise it.
You should. You absolutely should. God.
How about that demon evidence during the commercial break? Huh? Help me release
that.
That
was so
demon.
Scary. Oh my gosh.
I thought it was funny.
I was ready to run.
Well,
I can't do this show anymore. I've had enough.
Well, you know, if everybody doesn't know, Tammy Henderson is the newest member of the show, everybody. So if you weren't listening last week, just give her a warm welcome once again. And I know we've been talking all show, but we have lots of new people in the chat room.
So if you're sitting at home, give her a nice warm round of applause.
There yourself, you go.
At your computer.
Absolutely.
Say, go Tammy. Kick ass,
yeah.
Girl.
You can do
Where's
it.
Where's my cowbell when I need it?
I put that in Hawk with my bar.
Well, getting back on subject here.
All right.
You know, Keith, we talked a lot about Ouija boards, spirit communication, things such as this. Now, if somebody indeed has a Ouija board that they want to get rid of, what is the most appropriate way to do so?
Well, what I would not recommend is burning it. Burning it can cause retribution. So I would have it blessed and either bury it. Just bury it, not throw it out, because then, you know, somebody can find it. Bury it, or just give it to donate to the church. You know, tell the church beforehand that you're giving it to them. Donating it to the yard sale. So,
I was just going to say, donating it to the church yard sale.
Yeah, for right, the yeah. Pop project.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Bring in your Ouija
donate
board.
Donate it to a nursing home.
Donate your Ouija board to your... But do contact the clergy saying just you're bringing it in so they can properly dispose of it. So, or, you know, someone, you know, like myself or John Zappas, Adam Weiss, you know, that we can bless it and dispose of it properly. But I'm not asking people to send it, and please don't send me your Ouija board.
You can send it to me. You can send it to me, though, if you want. I like him. I use him.
His address is not. Just kidding.
Ryan will tile his floor with him.
Yeah. Well, I think John Zappa's got a whole haunted bureau. Somebody sent him once. Something, a whole, you know, thing that. What am I supposed to do with this? You know. So. But basically have it blessed and bury it is the best procedure. Never burn it.
Do you ever just receive random Ouija boards in the mail?
No, fortunately, I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Right, that is a good thing. That is a good thing. You know, I don't need things left on my doorstep like that.
It's like a lost puppy.
Right. Well, if you get something like that, you don't know, you know, is somebody giving it to you because they want it disposed of, or is somebody doing it because they want to curse you or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
You don't know if you don't know what the source is. You know?
They make great Christmas gifts.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, it's the
Ouija boards. You know, it comes with its own attachment, yeah.
Yeah, make sure it's possessed.
I wonder if the new ghost box that's out there is going to be similar to what the Ouija board was or is.
That's...
The communication box.
I've known people that get very, very into that, and they kind of... I've known some people that have had some very upsetting experiences with it because they take this gospel truth, they have this voice coming through, and of course, it's... can pick up AM bandwidth, too, so a lot of times you get a voice of some morning DJ, and they think it's like a spirit communication from Robert and Lee or something like that. So, but it's very, very dangerous to look upon that as legit spirit communication, because I've known people that get very dependent on it, too, and believe what it's, you know, I don't want to believe these terrible things it's saying, but what if it's true? That casts doubt in their mind. So people who are very suggestible can get into trouble with that. So,
yeah.
You know, that's, you know, may not be like using a Ouija board because you're not manipulating yourself, but still it can be very upsetting to some people. I have known some people who are very sensitive to get into trouble with that.
I know we must have been, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago now, Brian. Brian and I were at an investigation, and we had MRIP, Madison Researches into the Paranormal, guests of ours that came up to our neck of the woods. And one of them had the classic Radio Shack hack, is what they call it.
Oh, yes, right.
And the thing of it is there's an FM station, not even a half a mile as the crow flies from the location that we're in. And this is a 100,000-watt station. Yeah, this is a real, you know, working radio station. And every time he turned it on, and every time it would hit that station's frequency, I could hear the DJ every single time it hit, just for a split second. But as it would rotate, I could definitely see where somebody could fill in the blanks on their own of what they're hearing.
Right. I've heard of people, they tune into this, and they get a morning DJ saying, hello, and, you know, but it's all staticky, so they assume it's a spirit asking for help.
Right. Well, and you know, with all the gadgets and the gizmos that are out there, I mean, you know, do you think that over half the stuff that gets put out on the internet and whatever by people is false positives?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is. A lot of it is, and people, you know, are so looking for answers, and some people are ready to believe, and so some people prey upon that. Look at this new gadget; it can instantly give you instant spirit communication. So, you know, a lot of people will fall for that. So, I do think a lot of it is false positive too.
Be skeptical. You know, I don't see enough skepticism out there. I see too many people falling for everything.
Open-minded skepticism is what's needed. Yes.
Yeah.
Not cynicism, 50, just skepticism.
Yeah, I'm 50% skeptic personally. I never take nothing at face value.
Right.
You know, just because you just can't. You know,
hey, Joel, what's that on your nose? Wait, look down. There's something on your shirt. Whoops, I gotcha. Believe me.
Yes, you did. You got me.
He doesn't wear a shirt. It's hard to put all his fur in it.
Yes, I do the show nude.
No. Oh, no, that's no, a scary
I really
thought.
No, I really don't. I'm only kidding. No, no. I have full clothing on, but...
By the way, we were on a very interesting investigation last night at Old Slater Mill, historic Slater right. Mill in Pawtucket, yeah. Rhode Island, and there was actually an official combined Australian and American investigation because we had a visitor from Australia, from South Australia, in Adelaide, who runs Paranormal Field Investigators. That's Alison Oldmore. She's the co-founder and director of Paranormal Field Investigators. So her and members of New England Anomalies Research got together, and we went through all the buildings of the Slater Mill site. It was very interesting. So I think that in itself is kind of historic, that it was an official Australian-American investigation. And I haven't all reviewed all the evidence. So far, I've only come across one EVP where near member Lisa Duwalby, who, of course, many people are familiar with from Ghost Hunters, too. Lisa asked, she was about to take a picture, and, of course, she says, flash. We announce flash so we don't blind the person next to us. Says flash, and hear a spirit voice say, no. We've gotten that before. Some now spirits do not like when you flash the camera. They don't seem to like that. So we've gotten that before where an EVP will say no when somebody announces flash. So that's I've come across one EVP so far with that.
Yeah. Well, what's the criteria for an investigation for NEAR?
Well, we go in, we find out basically the layout of the place, the history of the place, you know, especially so we don't topple over each other, you know, how dangerous it is to lay out. And I work at Slater Mill as a tour guide, so I was very, very, my brother and I both did, so I was very familiar with it. And you go through, investigate, you set up equipment, try to get readings, try to look for electrical discharges, see if there's, you know, the electric magnetic field detector. Some people use that to see if ghosts are around. We basically use it to see if there's an electrical discharge that could possibly cause, say, a TLE, a temporal lobe epilepsy, which my wife is very, very on. She's very knowledgeable about temporal lobe epilepsy and things that cause hallucinations and feelings of paranoia and being watched. So we look for things like that and rule out things that could cause seeming paranormal activity when it's not. We look for the mundane causes. And then we may do a session where some people ask questions and answers, and we report it and see if spirit voices will answer us, either audibly or in the form of EVP, more likely. And so we just, you know, go through the buildings, each building, and spend a legitimate amount of time in there, like probably a half hour, 45 minutes in each building. But it's when it's on-site location like that. Now, it's a client investigation, that's different because you're dealing with a client that's having problems. So you have to interview them, get the whole background story. You know, is anybody taking medication? What could be causing these feelings, and what could be causing this activity? And but then, you know, very similar in some ways too. Mm-hmm. That's basically how we do a near investigation.
Okay.
Awesome.
And I'm very lucky that I have, you know, I'm married to somebody who's my. Not only my partner in life, but my partner in demonology and in paranormal investigation, too, because Sandra is extremely, extremely wonderful in the field, and, you know, just her support is just miraculous for me, so I'm very lucky to have somebody like that.
Yes, you guys make a great pair, because I was watching your videos on your website, and they're phenomenal. They're wonderful, and she's great. Both of you guys great together.
Thank you so much.
And sorry Sandra couldn't be with us tonight.
I'll give her the message, though. She's worked so hard all day, and she's just so totally exhausted. But I will certainly give her the message. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I would like to welcome you, Tammy, to the show. You're wonderful addition, and it's nice to talk to you as well.
Oh, well, thank you. Great to interview you, speak with you.
You're all great people anyway, so.
Oh, shucks. I wish I had a can to kick. No, we have
Keith, the check's in the mail, baby. Check's in the mail.
Yeah, the craziness and the humor, we're okay people here.
We are swimming up for that near Jess, so keep that in mind.
We can't be too normal.
Yes, we'll put a PayPal link up for you this afternoon. Tomorrow afternoon, we'll have one up for the near jet.
Yeah.
That's right. PayPal and Airjet. Yeah. And I'll probably get this little model or something in the mail.
we have to do a shameless plug time, guys. Keith, we need you to let all the listeners out there know where they can find you, where they can see you, how to get to your website, and find everything there is to find out about you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, nearparanormal.com. And we also, of course, our television show, Ghost on Air, where it's a TV paranormal talk show. We've had some very interesting guests. Just earlier this week, we had Shannon Sylvia on as our guest, and very, very fun show to do. It's a very relaxed atmosphere. And anybody who wants to see it, just go to our website, nearparanormal.com, and just click on to the archives. We have all our shows uploaded. So if you just want to sit back and relax and watch it, that's the way to do it.
There you go.
And Keith, do you have a twin brother, or have you cloned yourself for your show?
No, we are twins. Although some people would, wonder the personality difference, especially my wife.
Which one's the evil twin?
Yes, they always say that. Which one is the evil twin? Carl likes to claim that Tamil is the evil twin.
I've been exercising my brother for years. Hasn't worked yet. I gotta love it. Well, we're drawing close to the end of another show, guys.
We are. It's been
I gotta ask an honest question though, guys. Tammy and Joel, I gotta ask you guys a question for a change.
What? Yes.
Okay. Tammy first. Are you a believer?
Oh, no.
Are you a believer in demons?
Well, I would say yes. But my mom used to taunt me about, you're going to become demon-possessed if you don't watch yourself and behave. So, yes, I would say yes, but I don't want to meet anytime soon.
Joel?
Well, boy, that's a question and a half. The thing of it is I have never seen evidence of a demon, personally. Not to say they're not out there, because I have been investigating the paranormal long enough to know that there are a lot of surprises out there. But I hold judgment, but I am leaning towards a side for me that I can't answer that question, Brian, until I have proof.
There you go. I agree with you. I don't actually believe and put confidence into things unless I have evidence that shows me that they are real. I'm not saying that they couldn't be out there, couldn't exist. They might. They may very well, but I haven't seen any evidence of it yet, and who knows, maybe someday I will. I'm hoping to someday. If they exist, I want to see it. I really would.
My advice to everybody out there is just keep an open mind.
Yep.
You are a demon. What do you mean you want to meet one? You are one.
No. He's in the seventh layer of hell.
I just think everybody keep an open mind and do their thing.
You keep a pitchfork in your closet.
I do. I do.
Far beneath your feet.
Yeah.
Horns up on your head.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that fits him so well too. I'm gonna have to fire up the Photoshop tonight.
No, there you go.
Yeah.
You fire that puppy up and get to work, Joel. But you know what? We got to put another one to rest. Keith, thank you very much for being with us. We sure appreciate it, and hope you had a good time on the show.
Thank you so much for coming on. I had an absolute blast. It. Next week, guys, do not miss Patrick Burns next week. Absolutely.
Cool.
From the show Haunting Evidence. Boy, that's a hit show, isn't it, man?
I love that show. That was a good show.
Yeah, but, he's a great guy, too, personally.
Yeah, he
he's
is.
A nice
he's
guy.
A,
so
he's
everybody a make sure you're here next week for Patrick. And till then, everybody, good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.